Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Nefarious Podcast, episode 34. Not live with you here tonight. Tonight's show is pre-recorded. So if you send any messages, I won't be able to read them out tonight. But we've got a good show for you tonight. Fortunately enough, I've done my news collation. As there's not too much about the nefarious COVID we're going to be talking about this week, because man, it really shouldn't rule our lives and we should step over it. But it's still part of weekly politics, and that this is a politics show. So we're going to discuss, obviously, the biggest thing related to COVID, which is the ever-unfolding scandal relating to Boris Johnson. I'm going to be offering my thoughts this week on what I would like to see, if anything, maybe nothing at all, when it comes to those issues and narratives regarding polling, whether he should step down. Again, just my thoughts on the Conservative Party and the opposition. But before we get onto that, we'll cover a few small fry things. Now, last week, I talked about the dismal launch of Gina Miller's who's that again? Oh yeah, no, let me remind you, she's that brown woman who was astroturfed to fame for I think she tried to sue the government over Brexit. She was an ardent anti-Brexiteer. That's all she's known for, and she was invited on Question Time a few times. For example, she's invited to give her opinion on things occasionally on the news, as if she's actually important and significant. She's just some random businesswoman at the end of the day, completely unimportant. And she wants to throw her hat in the ring. She wants more to chew than just the Brexit issue when it comes to politics. She launched a new party last week and only a dozen or so people turned up. And the photographs look even worse. It looks like there's even less people from the photographs. But this week, she was asked about the dismal launch of her party on BBC Politics, and this is what she had to say. So, following the barnstorming launch of her True and Fair party last week, Gina Miller was in front of the cameras again today to explain why just 13 people, five of whom were political hacks, actually bothered to turn up. So this is her response when she was asked about the low turnout. It was a virtual event. We were following with Omicron. We were having a virtual event. And I do find it quite bemusing that apparently with nobody watching online, that we've all managed to write it up and write about my speech. So I think with a digital virtual event, we did the right thing. So this is just pure cope from Gina. She's like, oh yeah, well, you see, Omicron, yeah, the dreaded Omicron is why people didn't tell. Gina, you do know, like, people, by and large, are, I mean, obviously they're not living normally. A lot of, far too many people, in my opinion, will still go to things like shopping centre and wear masks, for example. But people, by and large, are living their lives again. They're going to the cinema, going to shops, they're going to the pub, they're going to nightclubs. They're doing whatever, right? Doing what normal people do, right? In large numbers, okay? So this idea that, oh, people didn't come to your party because they were socially distancing or scared of spreading COVID is laughable, okay? It's completely and utterly laughable, okay? We've had the all of the party conferences just a few months ago. We had Labour, Tory, Lib Dems. Guess what? They were pretty packed out. All the people that wanted to go to those boring, monotonous, unconsequential conferences for the establishment parties went, okay? They went. There was plenty of people. So why is it, is it just that people that would be interested in your party just happen to be the most hyper-conscious and responsible when it comes to COVID safety? Yeah, I very much doubt it. So, oh, yeah, that's the reason why. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. There's just no enthusiasm, Gina. You just got to accept it. And guess what? All those other conferences, they would have had virtual attendees, live streams, videos. So, yeah, just not buying it. So, there we go. That's rather funny. It's funny to see how she's had to, you know, spin this. But at the end of the day, she's going nowhere. She was also asked if she wants to become an MP, and she said she would like to. And it's just kind of cringe, isn't it? Because it's not going to happen. True and fair party. Yeah, okay, true and fair. Well, I don't think your politics would be true and fair, would it, Gina? It's not fair to betray the will of over half the country's wish to leave the European Union. Yeah, truth. What, you pursue truth, do you? You're pro-establishment. You believe in managerialism. You like the EU's bureaucracy. You like all that. You think our current regime produces truthful outputs, where it be scientific insight, optimal governance, you name it. You think it's the bee's knees, because you think liberal democracy is where it's at. And you're throwing your hat in the ring, and unfortunately you're going to get a little reality check soon enough. Well, you already have, because nobody's attended your party, thinking, oh yeah, you can actually make a change, Gina. And guess what? You can't. You can't make any change whatsoever, because this system has its own trajectory that it's going on, and there's little you can do. All you can do is lubricate that trajectory, and indeed you were a pawn of that when you were trying to reverse Brexit. So yeah, this idea that you're going to make any change is laughable, and what you really want to do is not radical in the slightest. I still don't even know what on earth she want, what her problem is. Why is she launching her own party? That's probably the biggest problem why no one's interested, is because what is this party about? As we said last week, she's got, what, three policies, something like that? Nothing. She has no vision. So, yeah, it's just very cringe. This is clearly just someone who just wants a bit of attention, let's be honest, guys. And I don't think we should give her any more attention than 5 minutes on this podcast. So we will move on. So, Government Quango publishes woke glossary covering decolonization and microaggressions. So yeah, we're going to be talking about the civil service for a little bit this week, because unfortunately, even though we've got the Conservatives in for nearly 12 years now, nearly 12, over a decade, guys, there just does not seem to be any pushback against this woke tidal wave that's completely taken over our politics. And of course, the Conservatives, not only do they do nothing, but they just allow it to manifest and get worse and worse and more entrenched within the state apparatus. And that's why they're disgusting scum. They're treacherous, spineless, lazy, and they just don't care. And half of them are, you know, they go along with leftist ideology anyway, even though they claim to be conservatives. But so this is one thing that's come out this week. So once again, the government's inability to control the actions of civil servants is proving an embarrassment for a political operation intent on preventing continued wokery. Well, UKRI, the Bees Quango, might be responsible for apportioning research and innovation funding, they found time to start lecturing on diversity issues. So they've got a glossary, guys. They've got a glossary for the civil servants within this institution. This is for UKRI staff. Information on new socially progressive phrases, such as accountability. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say that's a progressive phrase, but it depends what your intent with the word is. So they've got accountability, ways individuals and communities hold themselves to their goals and actions whilst acknowledging their values and groups to which they are responsible. So nothing particularly wrong with that. But obviously what the implication is that, oh yeah, well, we've got to be accountable, guys. We've got to pull our bootstraps up and we've got to be on it. We've got to be on our anti-white, anti-family, anti-heterosexual male, game. Because how else are we supposed to destroy civilization unless we're constantly on top of our game, trying to deconstruct the healthy prerequisites for a civilization? So the next buzzword is anti-oppression. Recognizing oppressions that exist in societies and ways to mitigate their effects to equalize the power imbalance in communities. Well, do you know what? I'm anti-oppression. You know, maybe oppression is a good thing. Inequality is a good thing. Why should different communities, why shouldn't there be a power imbalance between communities? To say that there shouldn't be a power imbalance between communities is to say that they're all of the same moral worth. And of course, this is not the case. Some communities are superior to others, rather. Okay, some communities take priority. And of course, within the topsy-turvy inverted leftist worldview, you've got to prioritize the people who are sick and not the kind of, and the kind of sick where it really damages society. So obviously, I'm not talking about being altruistic and helping your fellow man when they're down, like people who have physical or mental impairments. I'm talking about promoting hedonistic, twisted, unhealthy lifestyles, of course. And these are things that people can turn around. But that's what these people promote. Obviously, those kinds of groups should not be treated equally, and they should be suppressed. Their intents should be suppressed, because obviously, if you have an egalitarian agenda, okay, your agenda is to make your lifestyle worthy and equal to that of other people who have objectively more healthier lifestyles that actually contribute to the functioning of happy communities and society at large. So anti-oppression, this is something we've actually got to get a handle on, because I don't think, optically speaking, it's going to be the best to go around saying, yeah, we're pro-oppression. Nor is it also the best thing to go around saying I'm anti-oppression, because that's just a mouthful and ludicrous. And it puts you on the back foot as well, because then you exist in opposition to someone who's already making moves. So you're on the back foot there. I don't have the answer to this. But when it comes to that specific buzzword, anti-oppression, it sounds nice, doesn't it? Anti-oppression. Nobody wants oppression. Everybody wants to be treated with dignity. Everybody wants a fair shot, don't they? So you know, it's not always easy. And I do often have responses to various things, you know, how best to deal with these things. But I'm going to be honest with you, folks. It is a difficult one. If you've got someone going around going on about oppression, then you can't just say, oh, well, we're pro oppression, because that just sounds terrible. In that scenario, the best thing you can do is whatever they're saying is oppressive, you just have to deny or debunk. Obviously, these leftists go around saying things like, oh, brown people are oppressed. Obviously, that's untrue, because they're brought in to live amongst white majority countries that we had sovereignty over. That doesn't sound very oppressive to me. They're given free money by the hard work of the white population because they disproportionately take. You know, they're let into our societies where we have a thriving economy. You know, they're not owed that, but they're given it. You've got all of this anti-white narratives that are given to them, so we treat them like children. Obviously, they disproportionately victimize us in terms of criminality, and there's no justice there apart from just slinging them in jail. But even then, we still lose, because sure, there's what our system says is just, which is if you commit a crime against the state or what the state has set up as a crime, you get put in jail or you pay fines or whatever. That's usually how we deal with things. But then, if you sling somebody in jail, you're still having to pay to feed and clothe and shelter that person. So they're still a drain. It's not like they're gone. They're still costing us, even after they've already cost us with their criminality. So yeah. But when it comes to things like, oh, oppression of homosexuals, I mean, it's difficult to argue against them, because our society once upon a time, I don't want to use their terminology and say oppress, but suppress for definite. Suppress definitely is a word that has a lot less baggage than oppression. And why wouldn't we want to suppress things like the promotion and normalization of homosexuality, polygamous relationships, paedophilia, obviously, hedonistic sex lives, all of these things. We do want to suppress those things. So I suppose the takeaway is perhaps the best thing you can do is say, I'm not anti-oppression, but I'm pro-suppression. Suppression of inferior lifestyles, pro-suppressing decadent, dangerous narratives around nonsense regarding to gender, suppressing the normalization of transgenderism and pronoun culture. For goodness sake, that's probably the worst thing about transgenderism. Obviously, it's terrible when you spread transgender normalization around, because then you've got vulnerable young people in particular who can easily get caught up in this, who are perhaps they're not confident in themselves. Maybe they're quite depressed. Maybe they're just confused. Maybe they're a bit mentally unwell. And they then start to get these wacky ideas that, oh, having sex changes is going to improve their life, or that's what's holding them back, is the fact that they're born in the wrong body, when actually it's not the case. Maybe they have other issues that are the problem. And the amount of young people getting signed on for puberty blockers, as well as full-on operations, you know, skyrocketed. And that's a huge, that is a problem. And that's really, really sad for all of those individual cases. Fortunately enough, it's still always going to be fairly fringe and small in terms of how many people actually go through with that. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to not see these people, you know. Last time I saw a transgender person was a year ago. I had to work with them. Oh, gosh. Thank God I didn't have any nonsense around having to use certain pronouns and stuff, though they had a girl's name. And, yeah, I don't think I ever had to address them, though. But, yeah. Anyway, you know, so you are going to come across them, because there's enough of them where you will come into contact with them. But fortunately enough, it's still a relatively small problem. I'd say what's a bigger problem than people actually, you know, going along with the whole sex change stuff as a consequence of, you know, all of these transgender narratives. The biggest problem is the pronoun culture that comes with it. I'd say that's the biggest problem, as well as with all of this queer social politics as well. Because now you go to work and you get these equality and diversity training packages, okay? And it's the usual kind of stuff. But one of the most scary things is when you have an employer basically saying, look, if we ever happen to employ a transgender or a queer within this organization, you're being disrespectful if you don't use their preferred pronouns. That's a you problem. And so it's going to be seen as bullying. And so you're going to have to get fired, essentially, because you're causing a problem. Not them, not the people coming in who are making demands that are antithetical to reality and existence itself. And this is, of course, the problem with the idea of gender, the concept of gender itself, you know, separating gender from sex, rather than just, you know, you have a man and a woman, and you have the normal, natural bodily functions of a man is supposed to be attracted to women and vice versa. You know, the whole gender nonsense completely turns that on its head and makes any potentiality or possibility a reality, or at least, you know, at least linguistically, you know, hypothetically or in the abstract rather. And so then they can start making demands. Oh, this is gender pronouns and all of this. And then if you don't go along with it, oh, you're an oppressor because you're hurting their feelings. You know, you're confronting their reality. And it's horrible, and you're marginalizing, and you're bullying, and you're upsetting them. You're the one causing the problem here. They just want to go about life, you know, unharmed and to feel okay. Why don't you want to help them feel okay, you horrible person? So that's probably the biggest problem with queer and transgender politics. It's not actually people becoming queer, although that's a problem in of itself, you know, the destruction of sexual dimorphism, you know, this idea that, oh, now men and women barely look different from each other, women don't particularly dress conventionally feminine, they don't act particularly feminine either, you know, and there's so many ugly women that are just androgynous. You've got the problem with androgyneity, but then you've also got, and it's really sad, and I was talking about this with someone the other week, there really is this phenomena in the 21st century of these young women, and it's a significant amount of young women that, and for whatever reason, you know, they're not quite right, they've got mental health issues, they're depressed for whatever reason, usually, so, you know, often something that actually, you know, reasons that are not justifiable for them being completely miserable, but I guess people are so weak and told to be self-obsessed, so hypersensitive, you know, and not think about the greater good, just think about their own instant gratification, and oh, if life's slightly not perfect, then they become depressed and go off the rails. But you've got this phenomena of a significant amount of young women that just go out their way to just look as ugly and disgusting as possible. I'm talking about these young women that, you know, get themselves obese. They cover themselves in the most ludicrous tattoos, you know, and it'll either be a really repugnant tattoo, like just really creepy, like, you know, something really aggressive, you know, whether it be weapons or predator animals, or you know, just dark imagery, just, you know, moody kind of imagery, or it's the opposite and it's extremely childish. They will get just the most childish tattoos, you know, just like little drawings, or it'll be a tattoo of one of their favorite childhood franchises, whether it be like Pokemon or something ridiculous like that. Legend of Zelda, you know, something like Nintendo themed, for example. They'll get their favorite Nintendo franchise tattooed on themselves, you know, in various places. And they'll have dyed hair. They'll have the most weird and bizarre hairstyles that are attractive to nobody. They'll shave parts of their hair. Their makeup, they'll have just the most ridiculous makeup. You know, again, completely makeup is supposed to hide flaws and accentuate and heighten, you know, aspects of the human form that people find attractive. So obviously, people might put blusher on because that's associated with fertility. People obviously go out their way to make their eyebrows nice and parallel and neat. Obviously, women like putting on things like mascara to bring out their eyes, foundation to make their skin tone look equal, because that's associated with good genetic health. You know, these things, that's what makeup's for. But what they do is they get the makeup and then they just paint themselves with the most ridiculous stuff. Like they'll make their eyebrows the color black and look like really big and like triangles, and they'll wear some ridiculous color lipstick, and they'll often have the really repugnant piercings as well. Again, not just, you know, traditional nice dangly earrings off the earlobe. It'll always be something stupid. Like one thing I really hate, this started coming about like half a decade ago, was women getting nose rings in the middle of their nose, piercings in the middle of the nose. They look like bulls, right? You get these bulls that have those piercings as well, because then they're used, you put a chain around it and then obviously you can pull the bull around. They look like bulls. It looks ridiculous. Other piercings as well, like really over the, you got ear stretchers, you got other kinds of weird and ridiculous earrings as well. For earrings that don't just go on the lobes, and it just all looks ridiculous. It really, really does. It's completely unnatural. It's not, you know, heightening things that are traditionally attractive or nice about the human form, beautiful about the human form. These people go out of their way to look as disgusting as possible, so nobody really wants to associate with them. So what they're doing is just making their lives worse. They're making things worse for themselves, okay? You know, maybe some of these people might have a, you know, struggle with making friends or whatever. Well, you're certainly going to have a worse time of that when you're looking like that. You know what I mean? So these people already have issues. And then it's a form of self-abuse. It really, really is. That's often why I don't like people that have these weird tattoos or weird piercings or whatever. It's because it instantly signals to you red flags, like, oh, this is someone who's not responsible, has poor mental health, you know, and is wants to look unattractive. And it's just crazy to anybody who's slightly sound of mind. Like, why would anybody do this? You know, of course, people can get lazy with their appearance. People get overweight. They might not make the effort to find the best skincare routine. Sometimes they might not always change their clothes often enough, whatever. Or just even dress particularly fashionable. You know, that's one thing, okay, being lazy. But it's another thing when people go out of their way or let themselves go to such an extreme degree. And I have no explanation for it. You know, I really, really don't. I do feel sorry for people. I can sympathize with people being in a bad place in their lives where they don't help themselves. But I really will just never understand this culture amongst, you know, a demographic, a percentage of young, and it is young women. There's not many men that do this. There are, of course, you know, you always get like weird blokes that will decide to have like weirdly long hair and stuff like this. And it's like, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, who are you kidding, pal? Just like get a crew cut and sort yourself out. For a bloke, it's pretty straightforward though. Just like, just have a crew cut, okay? Lift weights, go to the gym, and you will start to become more attractive. You know, and of a higher sexual status. It's really not that difficult. Yeah, but men typically, they go less off the rails. They really, really do. But yeah, I have no clue, honestly. But it's a real shame. It's a real shame. And it is something, actually, that maybe we should start to get our head around. You know, what's causing this culture of wanting to look ugly? There is a wider problem of embracing ugliness anyway. You know, I'd say multiracialism is a pretty ugly state of affairs, personally. Some people say, oh, no, it's beautiful, brotherhood of man. But personally, I think it's quite ugly. You know, I think the human biodiversity of mankind is a beautiful thing. And, you know, the purity of the races is a good thing. You know, and I think it's quite ugly to, you know, mix it all together. Really, it really, really is, you know, and instead of having a functioning society at ease with itself, you've got a society with tensions, with multiculturalism, and of course, different races produce different cultures, and some are clearly better than others. Some cultures produced by certain races are, let's just put it, extremely crass, vulgar, dumb-witted, dim-witted. So, yeah. But we need to get to the bottom of this phenomenon of people looking ugly, because, well, we don't want it. You know, who wants to live in a society where people make no effort, or indeed make the effort in the opposite way, to make themselves, you know, ugly and repugnant? Who wants this? Nobody wants this. This is not a good indicator. This is not a good barometer of a healthy society. People like beauty. People have disdain for ugliness. It's always been like that. So why what has changed in society where we're just like okay with these a large proportion of people just looking the way they do? Because they don't look good at all. And it's quite selfish as well, because we were evolved, obviously, to find certain things ugly, and it triggers our repulse instincts. So they're actually being extremely selfish, because why should I have to put up with seeing repulsive people? Okay. Yeah. Some people are, you know, obviously we all have different genetics. Some people are born more naturally attractive than others. I'm not, you know, that's one thing. I'm not saying that, you know, people who have the short straw should be able to participate in society, but those who make, you know, go out of their way to look revolting. Okay. Why are we allowing this? Okay, and the only thing that stops it is bullying, you know. And this is the problem with anti-bullying culture, you know. You know, not that I think, you know. So obviously, bullying has to be is acceptable in certain circumstances to promote healthy lifestyles and attitudes, and then other times it can just be mindless abuse. And obviously, we detest that. Bringing it back off that side tangent, we're going to carry on with this woke credentials list. So the next word we've got is decolonization. Now, this is a word obviously we've been hearing for years now, but it's never really defined particularly what it exactly means. They've put here the process of undoing colonizing practices, confronting and challenging practices in the past, which are still present today. Not specific in the slightest, but then that still benefits them, doesn't it? Because then they can just label anything as, you know, colonize culture. Oh, we need to reform that because that was colonial or whatever. It's total nonsense, and it's always used for anti-white ends. That's all that needs to be said about that. microaggressions, daily behavior, verbal or nonverbal, that communicates hostile or negative insults toward a group, either intentionally or unintentionally. Oh, well, at least they've made it explicit whether that it includes intentional and unintentional, because often one of the biggest problems with all of these politically correct words and expectations is they're completely unfair to ordinary people because they don't know where they stand and the standards and the rules change. You know, the problem, the biggest problem, of course, for decades since this word has come into our vernacular with the word racism is, what does racism even mean? What does it even mean? You know, if you ask an ordinary person, their conception of racism means an instance of anti, you know, minority, ex-minority attitude or actions to that group. So whether it be just using racial slurs, you know, just, you know, picking out all of the making bad generalizations about a group and then using that as an excuse to, you know, berate a group and say that group is morally evil or wrong, or racism is when you attack an individual because of their association with a wider racial group, you know, things like this. But of course, racism doesn't mean that. It means anything and everything. I spoke to one leftist once, and you know, he defines a minority, for example, as someone who is a victim of prejudice plus power. Racism is prejudice plus power. You've got that one. That's a completely different definition to what most people conceptualize. And of course, that's anti-white because it means, oh, we can't be racist towards white people. So therefore, oh, when white people are raped or murdered because of their race, oh, it wasn't racist. It may have been racially motivated, but it wasn't racist. You know, all of these ludicrous phenomena. And it just goes to show you that even though, in theory, racism is supposed to be this universal blanket concept, and it can in theory go any way. You could in theory have an East Asian person being racist to a sub-Saharan African, or a sub-Saharan African being racist towards a Middle Easterner. In reality, does it end up playing out like that? No, it's always just white people are majority racist. All the other races, they get along fine. It's a shame if there's any problems, but no, only white people are responsible for, you know, the big sin, the big crime of racism. We're all sick to death of it. And again, it just goes to show you how the standards change. You know, ordinary people, they have this liberal conception where, oh, it's universal. But then, of course, it's always been a word that's where we've been on the back foot, because at the end of the day, nobody truly doesn't want to be racist, because people want to be ethnocentric and be pro their own group. And to be pro your own group means you have to discriminate against other groups. There's no two ways about this. So ordinary people were always on the back foot. And then lo and behold, the left have come in and changed the standards and the rules. So actually, no, it's not just when any person of any race is, rude or persecutes other races for whatever reason. It's just, whenever we say white people are morally wrong. You know, and another example of racism being completely ludicrous is when you have differential outcomes in whether it be employment, attainment, income, IQ. And, you know, this is racist. Oh, just the natural inequality of man is racist. Well, I thought racism was supposed to be something somebody did. It was an intent. You know, it was either something somebody thought, said, or, you know, done, right? It was an act, right? But suddenly, oh, it's not an act. It's just, oh, reality itself. But then, of course, they wouldn't say that They have to say, oh, this inequality is because of racism, i.e. somebody's causing this inequality. It's not, you know, how God made us or whatever, or how we evolved. It's no, it's white people, of course, because it always falls on us, creating this reality. Oh, then why are some minority groups so successful? Ah, oh, well, they just slip through the net, you see. You know, the Brahmin caste of Indians, I'm pretty sure that's the upper caste. Oh, their success? Oh, well, just a fluke. You know, who knows why they're doing so well in such a, you know, white supremacist environment? Or East Asian people, who knows why they're so successful, you know, even when they're amongst and around horrible white people? Or even Jews, for example. Why are they so successful when they're amongst horrible, genocidal, deadly white people? Who knows? They'll never explain why those groups are so successful and why time and time and time again other groups are at a similar place. You know, globally, no matter what you're assessing, we see a similar outcome. But no. And the other thing, so the last thing I'll say about this microaggression is, yeah, so it's got unintentionally as well. So again, people are going to be told off for being racist or microaggressing, because this microaggressing is just another way of saying racist, really, or is at least what people used to consider racism. Out now as a new term, microaggression, and you're still a terrible, morally evil person if you do it unintentionally, and it's just ludicrous. I'm glad they acknowledge that they're going to tyrannize you and ruin your life and, you know, browbeat you, even if you fall foul of their moral doctrine unintentionally. At least they're letting you know, hey, this is what's going to happen, rather than just letting you fall into it, right? And, you know, all hell breaks loose and you had no forewarning. No, they're giving you forewarning that if you accidentally are offensive and microaggress, you're going to get it. And the last one is safe space. Daily behavior, verbal or nonverbal, that communicates hostile or negative insults towards a group, either intentionally or unintentionally. I think that's a typo there, because that's the same that they've put for microaggression. But anyway, we know what a safe space is, guys. And safe spaces exist to uphold and defend minorities against the moral majority culture. So if it's sexual minorities, they need safe spaces against horrible, tyrannizing heterosexuals who are rightly going to say, you probably shouldn't be living your life like that. Whether it be racial minorities, oh, white people actually having standards and you fall foul of them? Oh, what, you need a safe space to uphold this multicultural hell? Yeah. We can't criticize your culture. And I will say one thing, another thing about this multiracial, which then inevitably creates a multicultural society, is it is kind of sad, because white people, for example, are always going to have their own standards that should be for society. And for example, the sub-Saharan community is always going to fall foul of that. You know, they have a different racial spirit. You know, the aggregate of their people, they produce a different culture, and this is always going to be the case, and it's always going to conflict with our standards, right, and with the innate culture that we produce. Okay, so it's cruel on everybody. This multiculturalism, it sucks for everybody. You know, it's unfair to import black people and tell them to assimilate to us, because then that puts a big burden on them to adjust to our standards when, you know, they're on the back foot, they can't exactly live up to them. But then we can't exactly have this multicultural society, because then we're not a society anymore. Because then we're just different communities who occupy the same land close to each other, but also have to have this complicatedness of having to share the same legal system, for example. And it's just a complete and utter mess. It's completely dysfunctional, hostile, tense, And we all hate it, and we know the way to resolve it, and that's to reverse the demographic change that have taken place and to go back to the old order, the old nationalist world order. That's what makes sense. That's what's optimal. And still, we are made to feel bad about this when we shouldn't. But there we go. And the last thing I'll say about Whitehall and the civil service when it comes to wokeness and the Tory parties being useless is, let's have a little look at this. Whitehall's latest £400,000 diversity and inclusion hiring spree. Whitehall is looking to boost its woke credentials for another year. New job listings from the last few weeks reveal that the Treasury, DEFRA, the Crown Prosecution Service, the Information Commissioner's Office, the Health Department, and MI... Oh, my God. MI5... Come on. I still get surprised. I still get shocked. You know, some things still take my breath away at times. Because even MI5 have, like, diversity recruit. Oh, my goodness. They're supposed to be national security. It's unbelievable. Even MI5 are on the lookout for more diversity and inclusion hires, all on taxpayer-funded salaries of at least £52,000. The lucky candidate to join the CPS as the new equality and diversity and inclusion advocate might even expect £79,000 a year if they're based in London. So, so let's see. The Treasury, they're going to have a head of strategy for diversity inclusion. Another one, you've got diversity inclusion expert, an expert in diversity and inclusion. So what, they're an expert in total nonsense. CPS, Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion Advocate. Well, that sounds ideological, doesn't it? Advocate. Well, maybe we don't want those things. Why do we want an advocate? Maybe we want, you know, someone who's... Well, what we need to do, should our guys ever get in, is we need to employ people on taxpayers' money. And their sole job is to go around utterly destroying equality and diversity and inclusion culture in all of the public and private sector. Okay, that's what we need to do. We need to employ these people in the public sector, and we need to employ people, and all big businesses will have to have kind of like how you have like safety inspectors going around checking the safety or for food and equipment for the private sector. We need to have a similar thing where we have somebody going around to all these private businesses, making sure they're not being anti-white, making sure they've not got any inclusion programs going on, any of this stuff. And what we also need to do is with certain industries, a lot of these businesses need to be really pressed on why they have such low white employment. We really, really need to do that. I mean, a lot of them obviously will be kind of the unwanted jobs. But the other thing I'll say as well, with that in mind, is, for example, one thing we really need to do is have caps, quotas, on the amount of white taxi drivers, okay? In some parts of this country, there will be not a single white taxi driver. All the taxi drivers are all Middle Easterners, okay? All of them. They will all, by and large, be Pakistanis, sometimes Indians, but for the most part, our Asian population in this country is Pakistani. So all the taxi drivers, by and large, in any cosmopolitan urban sprawl, they're just Pakistanis. And that's wrong. That's not right. That's weird. You know, that's just one of those weird things about modern life that people have just come to accept. Like, oh, yeah, taxi drivers, they're always brown. Like, that's such a weird thing. In a country that's majority white, you know, in Great Britain, okay, you cannot get a white taxi driver. You know, all the taxis, none of them are driven. A whole industry, okay, is a service not fulfilled and populated by people of the native stock. It's so weird. Don't you think that's weird? It's something we don't acknowledge, but we should. And we should make it an issue. We should say, why aren't there enough white taxi drivers? Of course, the left will say, like, oh, well, it's because lazy white people don't want to be taxi drivers. Well, I very much doubt that's the reason. There's probably so many other things going on there. A huge part of it will be ethnic nepotism. Okay. And if you want to see ethnic nepotism in full display, go to any KFC, okay, and you will see that it's very often you'll have whole franchises of these KFC restaurants where, for example, it'll be all Indian, okay? All the employees will be purely Indian. Sometimes you'll get ones that are majority black as well. But you have this really, and I don't know why it's KFCs. It's a really weird thing, you know, because other places like McDonald's, yeah, no, it's a mix. But I have noticed this phenomena where with KFC, perhaps just the, I honestly, I have no clue. But you have these people that set up the franchises, and then they're just allowed to be extremely nepotistic, and they just basically just employ people exclusively of their family or of their own ethnic group, of their own ethnic tribe. It's really weird. So, you know, don't tell me that's not going on in the taxi industry, right? Oh, all the people that are allowed to become taxi drivers and all of this stuff. You know, let's see. Inclusion and well-being business partner. Oh, that sounds nice. How lovely. Inclusion and well-being. Oh, you've not got your well-being unless you you know, have your sex operation yet. Have your sex change yet? MI5 head of EDI and culture, quality diversion, inclusivity. Or as Jordan Peterson likes to do it, he likes to switch it around so the acronym says DIE, which I think is very accurate, because that's often the story we get from all of this equality, diversity and stuff, because it's not just that it attacks us, but it's that, oh, we're at moral fault and there's nothing we can ever do to repent and make up for the misery that we impose. So we might as well just off ourselves and die. And then that coupled with all of the green politics where, oh, yeah, you shouldn't have kids because the world's evil and we're polluters and all of this stuff. That's the constant narrative messaging that we get. No wonder our birth rate is so low. And then lastly, DHSC has a deputy director, HR, culture, inclusion and well-being. Yeah, well, it's just oxymoronic, isn't it, having the word well-being next to inclusion and diversity? Because all this inclusion and diversity doctrine is extremely harmful to people's well-being, I'd say. Probably riles a lot of people up and they get very disenfranchised and short-tempered with it. So there we are. So, let's talk about the biggest news of this week, obviously. That being Partygate, as it's been coined, the ongoing saga. This week, number 10, Boris Johnson had to apologise to the Queen, presumably because, one, he's broken his own rules and there's a scandal, but also because the scandal included a party that took place one day before her husband's funeral. So that doesn't look good. But, you know, this whole little ceremony, I'm going to apologise to the Queen, like it matters, like the Queen's opinions matter. What, is she going to dissolve Boris Johnson's government if she doesn't like him enough? Because, you know, maybe she thinks, he's insulted her husband's legacy. You know, shat on his life because he died of COVID. I don't know how people would twist it, but yeah. Anyway. But yeah, she's not gonna dissolve his government, is she? Whether he apologizes or not, it's just not gonna happen. It's funny actually. You have the left who are supposed to be Republicans and they hate the idea of monarchy because it's supremacy and inequality and all of this stuff and it's old. We've got to get rid of it because it's old. If she was to dissolve the Tory government over this, they'd be like, oh, yeah, we love you, Queenie. You know, it's great that the Queen still holds political power. Even though all the rest of the time they hate the idea of monarchy, they want to abolish the Queen and all of this stuff. But it just goes to show you how cynical and, you know, unscrupulous they are. They just don't care about their own standards, do they? But I'm just, you know, this is hypothetical, but you know exactly how it would play out. It's the same with abolishing the BBC license fee. You know, they go on about, oh, the BBC is right-wing, it's pro-Tory. But then, oh, as soon as the Tories want to scrap the licence fee, suddenly they all become conservatives and they want to uphold this this wonderful institution, which they say is so evil and right-wing. It's funny that, isn't it? Yeah, funny how that plays out. It's because they secretly know it's their institution. And, yeah... They just don't care about their own standards. Boris Johnson gave an emotional apology this week, famous apology where he's looking very sad with his face mask on and he's looking down at his feet and he said, oh, you know, I feel bad. You know, I have my regrets over the party. I feel bad for the Queen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who cares? But obviously, people are very angry about this. The consequence of Partygate has been quite huge, it seems. It's always hard to tell to what extent, you know, it's media fabrication as the extent to which people are angry. I'm certainly not in touch with ordinary people about whether they're angry about it, because frankly, I don't care. I don't care about ordinary people's opinions about whether they're pissed off Boris Johnson breaking the rules. And personally, like, let's say they were, I think they're wrong. I don't think they should be angry with the Prime Minister for breaking the rules. I mean, they can be angry about the double standards, and they should, but the thing is, they're angry for the wrong reasons. Okay, if they're angry at him because, oh, he broke his own COVID rules and those COVID rules are there and legitimate for our safety, then, oh, wow, he's being reckless and selfish. You know, how dare he? But that's not the problem here. The problem is he's imposed unnecessary lockdowns and restrictions, stealing our liberties, making us wear masks and getting all these vaccines. But then in reality, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if loads of these politicians aren't even jabbed, okay? You've had various videos over the past 2 years of people getting jabbed, but then actually, oh, it's fake. Or, you know, they're getting jabbed with something, but it's like it's their mate giving them the jab. And it's like, I bet that's not the actual coronavirus vaccine, do you? I just don't believe it. I don't believe it in the slightest. I really, really don't. But people are apparently angry about this. And the way I guess we can see whether it's the case is looking at polling, although even then polling can be warped for an agenda, but nevertheless, apparently Partygate has put Labour 11 points ahead of the Conservatives. Now, this is quite disappointing because, I mean, they're both awful, but Tories are slightly less worse, because at the end of the day, if we had Labour in charge right now, we'd probably all be masked up and thrown in prison and we'd probably have camps by now. To be fair, that hasn't happened on the continent just yet. But again, we keep hearing news stories about that going ahead. And some places just going off the rails. Obviously, Australia's been off the rails this entire time. Austria is a new one that's getting worse for some bizarre reason. But the public's anger with the partying in Downing Street is hitting the Tories where it hurts, at the polls. The latest poll sees Labour lead rising to 11 points over the Tories. That is a mountain to climb before the local elections in May. Yeah, it's pretty bad. And I mean, people have short-term memory loss, but it is only, what, 3 or 4 months away. So it might still be fresh in people's heads, won't it? And of course, COVID isn't going away anytime soon. But yeah, one of the biggest problems with democracy is people just get, amnesia, don't they? They keep voting for these parties and they keep forgetting all the ways they're betrayed in which these parties abuse them. They just keep voting for them. I mean, that's, you know, one of the big problems is obviously the first past the post system. But it's just a problem in general anyway. You know, the voters are stupid, okay? They really are, and they don't care. And most of them aren't interested in politics either. So why would you want to give them a vote when they're not interested in what they're voting in? Okay, they just vote based on, you know, glib emotions and charisma and also media narratives as well. You know, it's just completely nonsensical, but there we go. But anyway, people are so angry that they're like, right, I'm going to vote in the opposition to punish the Tories. It's like, oh, right, so you're going to vote for the opposition, which is, you know, just going to make your life even worse. You know, yeah, it's an insult. It's, you know, it's an exposure of, you know, the elites, the aristocrats living it up whilst we have to deal with all the shit, right? But this isn't the worst thing ever. But apparently people are so angry that they'd vote in, you know, an anti-Brexiteer leftist like Keir Starmer, who hates them, bitterly hates them, ordinary people, the horrible working class gammons. They'd rather vote in him just to punish Boris Johnson. And I think that's ridiculous, because Keir Starmer would have us, as I said, you know, more lockdowns, more face coverings, probably have mandatory jabs, because that's the mindset of these people. The idea of traditional independent individual sovereignty with these people is non-existent. So yeah. And it's the weird thing as well about this, as we'll come on to in a moment, is the government's now wanting to scrap the restrictions, like mask mandates. And in particular for school children, but I'll get more into that in a moment. But their approach now to get people on side, to recover from this scandal, is to get rid of the restrictions and all this. But then people, obviously, the Labour's doing better in the polls. But we know what Labour's like. And I think ordinary people should know what Labour's like. They would plunge us into more lockdowns and mandates and all of these things. So it is an interesting thing, isn't it, that the voters want to vote for a party that would give them more COVID tyranny, but the Prime Minister, to win people over, wants to reduce the COVID tyranny. So there's kind of an incoherence going on here. But again, this is what first past the post politics does. It creates incoherent political realities. Because it is totally bizarre. I would imagine that reducing the lockdown stuff probably would help the Tories. And it is a shame that people are resorting to voting for a party that would give them more restrictions, even though I imagine people don't want them, just to punish him. But, you know, this is how topsy-turvy first past the post is. You know, this should go down as a little case study as to how nonsensical and bizarre and twisted first past the post is. So people are angry, the public are angry, and you've got David Davis coming out yesterday, basically telling Boris Johnson to leave, get out of office. So you've got these backbenchers, you're telling Boris Johnson to leave. And Some of them, like David Davis, I haven't looked at his voting record. I imagine he's been okay, but then he's probably still been a spineless coward in some of these instances and probably voted for a few of them. But any of these backbenchers that are now saying, oh, Boris, you got to go, you're awful. These people voted and supported mask mandates, vaccines, lockdowns, all of these things. So people should not be happy with these backbenchers that, oh, they seem to be plucking up the courage now to be telling their prime minister to go. And I made a Telegram post about this, and there's three things really, really wrong here, okay? These people do not deserve praise for telling our terrible prime minister to go. One, because they're doing the media's bidding, okay? The media hate Boris Johnson. They want him gone because he's an evil Tory. So they're doing the media's bidding. Secondly, it upholds the COVID narrative. Oh, you're a terrible person, Prime Minister. You partied when, there was a pandemic going on. Okay, so that's that. But then the other thing is, because the public are angry with the Prime Minister and they want him gone, they just want to get rid of, they want to stab their own PM in the back, I guess. Because then it secures their seat and their party's victory at the next election. So I'm not going to go cheering for any of these Tories because they're completely and utterly spineless and cowardly, okay? They're only confident enough now to tell their PM to get lost because the media, is giving them the confidence to do it. Whereas when we had Theresa May, these Tories all went along with her regime, didn't they? Okay, they went along with all of her crap that we all had to put up with, and they didn't pluck up the confidence then because the media didn't want Brexit. Okay, that class didn't want Brexit. So, it's like, oh, you pluck up the courage when what you're saying is in line with what the media wants. Sorry, you're still a spineless coward, and that's what Tories are. They're always spineless cowards. Always trying to put party cohesion first at the expense of the people. So as a result of this, the best thing to come out of all this whole ordeal, though, is that the Plan B has been scrapped. So that was obviously that came in, what was it, last month? You had the announcement of Plan B, and this was to remandate masks on public transport. That was just totally ridiculous again because there's been no evidence that those cloth masks do anything. There's been little evidence at most that it does significant, basically like nothing. But one thing that I'm really happy about, so obviously the mandates are gone, but not that it really made much impact on my life anyway, because I never went along with them to begin with. I've probably worn a mask no more than half a dozen times in the past 2 years. And usually that was just because I really couldn't be bothered in certain circumstances with any aggro. But otherwise, I don't care. And enough ordinary people don't bother with it where it's never an issue. Again, I went to the cinema just, 3 days ago? And they literally employ a guy to just stand at the cinema to say, "Have you got a face mask?" And you just walk past and say, "Exempt." And there's nothing they can do about it. And it's great. Even though, it's the law, or it's our policy at the cinema that you've got to wear a mask now. What are you going to do about it? Unfortunately, they still take our money. But some people, obviously, are so zealous that they'd rather not have your money, in which case screw them. And I was really sad, actually, the other day, walking through a high street. You see all of these small businesses, like really small independent businesses, and every single one of them in the window said, "Face covering mandatory." And I'm like, oh, for goodness sake, this is the problem, right? It's all well and good, you know, the having a market economy, competition, all this. But if you've indoctrinated all of the business owners, whether it be big or small, to go along with this insanity, it makes no difference at that point whether you live under a Soviet system or a capitalist system. You know, whether you have a market economy or not, like if everybody's indoctrinated with mask mandate, you know, insanity and enforces it, it makes no freaking difference at that point. But the best thing to come about from this scandal is now the kids won't be forced to wear the face masks in school. And this is a huge victory. And it's not a victory that we've earned, or like any organized minority group that has won. This is just, again, just used to appease ordinary people who are rightfully pissed off that kids are wearing these things. And yeah, they don't have to wear them anymore. So this is just to be popular. But yeah, the idea that, oh, this is some win because of like people, you know, with all of these COVID protests and stuff like this. I mean, come on, guys, they've done like little, if anything. The best you could say that all of these anti-lockdown, anti-vaccine protests have done is it holds off any more extremity in which the state can go. You know, maybe the reason why we don't have COVID camps right now is because of anti-lockdown protests. But otherwise, they don't really achieve a whole lot. Millions of people still had their vaccines. There was a story about a week or two ago that said, actually, the unvaccinated is a lot higher than previously thought. So basically, the government have been lying about how many people are unvaxxed, and there's more of us than many people initially thought, which is a good thing. But yeah, nevertheless, we still have a vax culture. People freaked out over Omicron, got their boosters. It's all very depressing, but there we go. So yeah, now the kids don't have to wear the masks anymore. There was never any good, solid empirical evidence that it made any difference. And it's all well and good, even if it did slow the virus a tad, you have to look at all of the other things that are going on. It's going to really impact children's development, that both social and academic. I covered about half a year ago research that showed that actually the face coverings are reducing IQ because it's really adversely affecting children's quality of education and social development, and therefore cognitive development. So the face masks are screwing over people, you know, children's livelihoods, development, and now they're going to have more problems socializing because they're having to deal with communicating with people without seeing their face. It's going to cause more anxiety. They're going to have grown up in a culture where you know, never before have British people particularly had to deal with clothing mandates. You know, that's something more that happens in the Middle East. That you have the Sharia police going around, oh, if you're not wearing your burqa or your hijab, or your clothes are a bit too scantily clad, oh, the police come and haul you up on it and take you home, right? But yeah, now in Britain in the 21st century, we have clothing mandates. And if we were ever to get any kind of clothing mandates, apart from obviously not being naked out in public, it should be something like a banning the burqa. But even then, I've changed my tune on banning the burqa because honestly, just let these people wear the burqa, because then I know that I definitely don't want to associate with them. Then they're going to create more of their own ghetto culture, and it's good for us to have ghettos because, again, it keeps them separate from us and less entwined with us, because we don't want liberalism to do its thing and to, you know, break down barriers and, you know, make all cultures and values morally relative. We don't want more Muslims become atheists, for example, because obviously they're from the Middle East. They're Middle Easterners Britain is not a Middle Eastern country. We want these people to stay separate and have a strong identity so that when the time comes, they know, and it's less painful for them and for us, for them to leave and obviously go back to their native homelands. But yeah, so I'm really happy about this. It's a shame that it took a political scandal and a selfish, unscrupulous prime minister to get rid of face coverings in schools for children just to boost his own polls. But, you know, hey, I guess that's democracy working, isn't it, guys? Oh, the public's opinion matters. And so we got this positive thing now. So, well, hey, this is a democracy working. All it took was a political scandal. So, yeah, this is everything working fine. The unfortunate thing, though, because London is kind of like its own micro state, essentially, within Britain now, these days, is Sadiq Khan, Mayor of London. Oh, well, yeah, Plan B's ended, but guess what? Masks are going to stay mandatory on the tube regardless. So, fuck you, Sadiq Khan. You utter wet wipe. We hate you. You're awful, virtue signalling, nasty piece of work. And I was on the tube 2 weeks ago, and there was mask mandates. I didn't wear one. And I didn't wear one 2 months ago when I went. And I will never wear one. I will never wear a mask on the tube. There's nothing you can do, Mr. Khan, to make me wear one should I ever find myself on your crappy tubes again. So, yeah. A few more things before we finish up today. So we might as well talk about this. So, it's nice to see sometimes, you know, some celebrities aren't completely crazy. So you had the celebrity chef, Andy Warhol, Anthony Warhol. I don't actually know how to pronounce. Yeah, it's not Warhol. Warhol's, Warhol's the artist. So my apologies. Anthony Warhol Thompson called anti-vaxxer for refusing to discriminate. So the British celebrity chef, Anthony Thompson, was put... has put a sign above his pub, the Greyhound, in Oxfordshire, making clear that unvaccinated people are welcome. Well, isn't that nice? You know, that's a bit of diversity and inclusion, you know, actually being positive for a change, isn't it, folks? You know, this is diversity inclusion for the people, not against the people, particularly against white people and sane people as well. So after he put up the sign which says, "We do not discriminate..." Oh, you had to go for it, but okay. "We do not discriminate race, gender, age, disability, vaccinated or unvaccinated." See, this is the thing. This is the assimilation of inclusion of the vaccines into inclusion culture, okay? This is a bad thing, okay? Because we don't want our rights to be protected as unvaccinated people in the same way that, oh, discrimination against black people and women and sexual minorities is protected. Okay, we don't want to become a protected class like them, okay? Because guess what? We want to take away those protections because we don't agree with them. We want protections for the unvaccinated because we're sane, but we don't want protections for those other things. So... It is kind of gross how you've got protecting the unvaccinated is being kind of hoovered up into this culture, this legal culture of protected characteristics. Because I mean, in a sense, we do want a political system that does have what. Some people, what you could twist as protected characteristics, but it's more we want a culture of upholding and saying which demographics are, you know, and lifestyles are supreme. That's what we want. You know, that's a little bit different because protected characteristics is always framed as, you know, this whole victimization and oppression narrative. That's not what we're about. You know, the reason we have marriage and marriage exclusive to men and women is because the union of a man and a woman raising children is supreme. And so they should get special privileges. That, you know, they should be privileged. And in that sense, you know, again, it's kind of skewing it, but you could say protected characteristic, right? You know, they should have more rights and protections, and our culture should be more orientated to protecting that union, for example, between a man and woman, you know, or whether it be protecting the sovereignty and the indigenous rights of white people and upholding their culture and having their culture supreme rather than, you know, spending public money or whatever, spending our time, you know, glamorizing and celebrating the diverse and the foreign. Okay, we shouldn't be doing that. So, yeah, it is annoying, okay? Why can this pub say, we discriminate on race, gender, but not on vaccine status? You know, why can it be more specific like that? So that's why I hate, you know, these universal... And it is ridiculous. It goes along with this old universal culture where it's like, oh, it's wrong to discriminate, you know, equally on vaccine status, disability, age, gender, race. And it's like, no, it isn't. They're not all equally as bad to discriminate. Some of those are worse to discriminate than others. It's worse to discriminate against an unvaxxed person than, say, somebody based on their race. I'm sorry, it just is, okay? It really just is, okay? That's a privilege we should have in our own homeland. But it should not be a culture, our culture, for our native people, that we should be forcing crony capitalist vaccines on everybody. You know, people should be protected from crony capitalist vaccines. So everyone equal here, everyone welcome. The TV chef received negative press coverage because the sign was reportedly made by an anti-vaccination group. I'm doing it because I don't want to discriminate against anyone. Well, that sounds nice, but otherwise you wouldn't be able to live your life functionally, Mr. Thompson, unless you discriminated. But there you go. At the end of the day, we've done our time. We've done 2 years of this, lockdowns and various things and precautions, and I think the time is to move on. Well, I agree with you there, buddy. The famous chef noted that he was not an anti-vaxxer, but merely believed in medical freedom. Yeah, well, exactly. If you don't want to put chemicals in your body, it has to be your choice. So, yeah, I think that's enough for that one. So, you know, it's like you get one thing that's good, one thing that's bad. The bad, obviously, you know, it's packaged as this like protected characteristic, you know, liberty doctrine. But at the same time, you know, it's a good thing because it's like, you know, it's good to have celebrities, high profile people saying, yeah, I'm not on board with vaccine tyranny. So, yeah, that's a good thing. When it comes to vaccine tyranny, 9-year-old disabled boy forced to take exam outside in freezing weather because he didn't wear a mask. So that's nice, isn't it, folks? That's really, really nice. And of course, as I said, you've had Australia being crazy, but Austria on the continent is soon catching up to Australia's insanity. So Austrian student has been punished despite having an exemption. And this was a punishment as well. It's totally cruel and vindictive. So an investigation is now underway as to ascertain why the student in Wolfsburg was treated in such a manner despite having a valid mask exemption. Well, valid mask exemption by the rules of the regime in Austria. You know, but I don't think any mask mandates are valid, do you? So a photo shows the boy Jason sat outside up against the window of the classroom in temperatures of -1 Celsius. The boy's parents have hired a lawyer and are now considering moving their son to a different school. Well, that's very sad, isn't it, when you're so angry with a school and how they've treated your kid that you just want them to go to a different school. That's just... yeah, it's just completely awful. And the kid was disabled as well, so he's already quite vulnerable. And they punished him. You're right. They didn't just put him outside with some bullshit excuse like, oh, well, we've got no other space. You know, you know, we need to protect everybody, right? You know, they couldn't just find a little room, another room for him to do his exam. No, they put him outside in the cold, right, next to the window where everyone can see him as well. Totally cruel and vindictive. And how the hell this managed to happen is crazy, because that means all of the adults, all of the examiners and all of the teachers in that school would have gone along with this, right? It's not just one or two crazy fanatical teachers. This implies that they're all fucking crazy. And that's really scary. It's really scary to think you have this culture and so many people of this character who would do this to a child is crazy. Speaking of children and teaching, parents outraged as more schools push transgender materials on three-year-olds. Handout advises teachers to ask kindergartners for name and pronouns. So parents watchdog group Parents Defending Education has warned that a school district in Minnesota is pushing transgender and pride books and materials onto children as young as 3 years old. The group warns that St. Paul Public Schools is now allowing two separate organizations called Amaze and Out Front Minnesota to push the materials to their schools. It's amazing how they're able to corrupt these Christian schools, or at least schools that are, you know, named after saints. It's pretty depressing. This is what I was saying earlier about a pronoun culture. This is a big problem. Most of those kids, fortunately, won't go on to become actual transsexuals. But it's, you know, they probably might become gender confused or queer, you know, or be gender fluid or become bisexual or whatever, you know, because they're being taught like that heterosexuality, and that is not supreme, is not the best, and they're being indoctrinated with gender nonsense. So, yeah, poor children not getting a proper education there at all, are they, folks? They're being denied a real education, and they're victims at the end of the day. These children are victims. And a lot of people, like people of my generation and beyond, will need serious, heavy-handed, re-indoctrination to indoctrinate them into a normal way of life, into a normal way of thinking. And, you know, and it's funny, isn't it? Depending on what your worldview is, defines what you think is indoctrination. You know, the left wing probably think it's indoctrination to have a good quality education where you're taught logic and reason and the scientific method, because then, oh, they won't go on to become leftists. And, you know, and it sounds crazy, but that's how you have to view it, okay? You have to view it as, even though we're right, okay, morally, objectively, scientifically, on many things, you still have to view it as we are indoctrinators, we are manipulators, we have agendas, okay? We do. We want power. We want our what we see as normal worldview to take hold and be manifest. But you have to view it as we're not in power, and you have to understand that our opposition are freaking crazy, okay? They do not live by our standards. They do not care about objectivity, the scientific method. They do not care about anything. They just have their bizarre dogmas that they pursue for whatever reason. And so they're always going to view us as the oppressors, as the indoctrinators, as the liars, as the murderers. You know, remember that old, you know, people always going about, oh, Tories have blood on their hands. You know, all of that's, you know, that is their worldview. They think the right is evil and we think they're naive, and that's wrong. We have to change that. We have to make it so they think we're naive and we see them as evil. You know, that's what we have to do. Okay, you have to view the left as evil, because that's what they are. They exist to induce chaos in the world. That's it. And so they are evil and satanic. You know, if you want a good example of the kind of evil that their ideology allows to manifest in reality. Just look at this headline. Afghan migrant who raped and strangled 13-year-old girl was given asylum in the UK after arriving on a boat. Okay? That's the kind of world we live in. Okay? Because we don't view the left as evil, as an enemy that should be crushed by any means. We say, hey, I disagree with you, but you deserve an equal voice. You deserve an equal shot at the ballot box. You're allowed to be the opposition party and second biggest party in the country. No. When we reform society, that should not be the attitude that we take. Let's put it like that. But yeah, you know, we live under a state where it allows asylum seekers to rape. We allow in rapists and murderers. And guess what? This Afghan migrant probably won't even get deported, will he? Because then, oh, what's that? Oh, the left-wing Labour Party will pull a massive stink because, what, a dozen people are going to actually get deported, and then they'll say it's racist, and then the Tories capitulate, and then the corrupted court systems challenge it and all of this, and then nothing gets done. So we just have to allow these rapists and murderers in, and then we can't get rid of them either. So isn't that great? And then they, as I said earlier, cost us money. It costs us money to keep these immigrants here. So they literally have brought nothing but destruction to people's lives and wasted our taxpayers' money and taken up prison cells. The last thing we'll talk about tonight, that's German government demands big tech crackdown on Telegram and other free speech apps. We often hear this, to be honest. There's, you know, quite often every month you often hear about, oh, such and such government wants to look into censorship. At the end of the day, it's all well and good saying they're looking into it. Until it actually happens, you know, at the end of the day, every government, you know, it's the state. The state's always wanting to regulate society. So it's always going to be the interest of politicians and state actors to want to regulate or engage in censorship. So if you've got apps like Telegram, yeah, it's gonna cross the mind of somebody working for the state to go, maybe we should regulate this. I'm not too worried, but you know, it might happen. We've already in this, I think, in you've got the Apple App Store already tell Telegram to censor, and some Telegram channels are censored. And you can't view them on the iPhone. And if you want to view them on Android, you have to download the Telegram app from their website rather than the app from the Android App Store. Just to be able to look at some channels, unfortunately. Channels like our dear friend Earthling Carl. You can't look at his Telegram channel, for example, which is a big shame if you have the app downloaded off either App Store. But yeah, that's all I want to say about that. It's not too concerning, but it's just always the case that you have governments considering this. Whether it actually happens, that's another thing. We'll have to talk about that when it happens. But if they start engaging in censorship, well, then people will just keep shifting, won't they? They'll just keep going to other apps and other websites, and we'll never, ever stop migrating, ever. And if anything, we had another report this week by an establishment institution, no less, saying censorship doesn't work, and it just draws more people to go and look for the truth. Oh, and it makes people skeptical of authority. That's the biggest thing, is it makes people less trusting of authority, which is a good thing, because all of the narratives from our authority figures are not in our interest, so we shouldn't believe any of them. It's a shame, because if they are actually telling the truth, then we're not going to know because we're so sceptical. But hey, they've done this to us. They've completely, utterly destroyed trust in society. And, you know, there's no solution. You can't then say, oh, it's a shame that we don't trust our institutions. Let's just trust them again. Because it's like, no, they're evil, corrupt, and want us dead. So there we go. But that's going to do it for tonight, folks. So thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Obviously, this won't be live on Odyssey. I'm just going to upload this as a pre-record video to Odyssey. But to those who enjoyed on DLive, I hope you enjoyed tonight. And take care, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.